Welcome back to Storytellers on a Mission. I'm Tom Baudette, and you're listening to stories from our April 19th show in Brattleboro, which raised much-needed funds for the Morningside Shelter for the Homeless. How we do this is we invite our talented and big-hearted friends to come to Vermont for a night and work for nothing so that we can give all the ticket money away to other people. The weirdest thing about it is they come. Our next storyteller, Peter Aguero, has done it twice now. Peter is a big, long-haired mountain of a man with the state of New Jersey tattooed on his chest. That's a true story. He's also one of our very favorite people here at the Hatch, and he'll soon be one of yours, too. Here's Peter Aguero with another true story.
I'm on the 7 train with my mother-in-law, Linda, and it's a beautiful day. It's Halloween in 2007. And we're coming around the curve after the Court Square stop and about to go into the tunnel. The 7 train's an elevated train in Queens. And I have our eyes covered. And as we come around the corner, I take my hands off her eyes so she can see the riot of color that's 5 points, graffiti mecca. Now, stories are magic. So in the story, 5 points hasn't been whitewashed at midnight by a bunch of greedy developers and taken away that one of the last bastions of street art in New York City. It still exists right now where we are on this train in 2007, and it's beautiful. There's just hundreds of tags of every color, and like 40-foot tall airbrush picture of Biggie Smalls and a giant tiger and all these tags of these like luminaries of independent art in New York, and she loves it. And she loves it, which is good because I'm trying to figure out what I'm supposed to do with my mother-in-law all day because this night, the police had gotten back together, and they were playing one of their last shows at Madison Square Garden. And Linda is a big fan of rock and roll. She was in band back in the day. And her and my wife, Sarah, later that evening, they have tickets to the Garden to go see the police. So it's my charge because my wife is, we'll call her the sugar mama. She has a job, and I don't, so I'm gonna, take Linda around all day. Now, normally, again, it'd be easy. You have friends visiting New York. What do I do? Let's go day drinking. It's fun. It's real great. Or, there's some herbs. We can have fun, but I can't. My mother-in-law is a teetotaler. She's a social worker. Her a child of alcoholics. She is not about. She doesn't enjoy or approve of any of the things that I find fun. So I'm trying to. I'll just take her around to the fun things that I enjoy in New York. We've been living there for a few years. My wife and I moved to Queens and Sunnyside. It's a great little neighborhood. We lived in Jersey forever, my wife has epilepsy, so she can't drive anymore. So we moved to New York so she can get around. And it was a big move for us to move to New York. But the whole family was like, are they going to be able to do it? And spoiler alert, I'm alive. So we get off the 7 train at Times Square and go up through the escalator into the madness that is what Times Square is now. I want to show her this really cool thing. If you go up to 46th Street and Broadway, right over this collection of grates in the ground in this island in the middle of everything, there's a droning noise. It's part of a sound sculpture that was installed in the 70s. There's no sign around anywhere, and I discovered it by accident one day. I had some herbal supplements myself, and I just stopped in the middle, and just like, there's this, if you stand in the sweet spot of it, it creates this cylinder of white noise around you, and you can have silence in the middle of the chaos of Times Square. And I know she would dig it. She's a yoga instructor, and a hula hoop instructor, too. She's a long blonde hair, and she wears a lot of flowing, it's like Stevie Nicks, but if without the stuff Stevie Nicks did to become Stevie Nicks, not, you know what I mean? Like, so I knew she would dig it. So we go up there and we stand, and I don't even tell her what we're going to do. And we walk up there, and then we stop right in the middle of the drone, and I say, listen. And she does, and we both take in a breath and another, and we just are looking around at, like, all the, it's these towers of lights and sound and movement. And it's a beautiful day. It's one of those days in the fall where there's not a cloud in the sky, and it's a beautiful blue, and the temperature's perfect, and the sun's shining down, and you know the winter's going to come, but it's not here yet, and you feel so good. And she says, I know why you like this. And I said, yeah, I know you would. And she said, it's a place where you can be quiet. I know you like to be quiet. I said, yeah, that's why I go here. So we start walking, and we go east on 42nd Street, and there's the Pots and Pans guy. He's just this lunatic who's got cookie sheets and pots and pans. He's just banging on them like all this crazy percussion, and it's like amazing. And she starts pulling out her phone, and she wants to start filming him. And he, with not even skipping a beat, he just like picks up one of the baking sheets and holds it up, and it says $1 for pictures. And he's just like holding it, and she's like, that's clever, and gives him like $2. I'm like, oh, you sucker. And so, you know, she listens for a little bit more. We walk over to Bryant Park, and we go in. The lawn is still open, and we're laying down. It's this just absolutely amazing, like thick, verdant, green postage stamp carpet in the middle of New York City, right by the library, and all these people are around, and we're just laying down, looking up at the sky, just completely unaware that we're in the city anymore. And I realize, like, I'm showing her these places that are, you know, quiet places for me, like places where I can just kind of like be, places I don't normally take anyone else, because they're places where I just want to be just kind of quiet. And it's fine with her. Linda and I have known each other for a long time. I started dating her daughter in 1997. And, you know, at first, Sarah was on the crew team. I'm sure her family had visions of her, you know, dating some nice guy in khakis named Chip. You know what I mean? Like, and I showed up, and I was, like, kind of going to college, and I was a bouncer at night, and they were like, all right. But, you know, and once I met Sarah, I fell in love with her right away. And once I met her mother, I was like, she's got a good-looking mother. I'm going to buy early and invest, because that's the way to do it. And it's paid off in dividends. I got a hot wife. I'm not even going to lie to you right now. So, yeah, I know that Linda and I, we've known each other for a long time, so we can have those kind of quiet moments together. We've, over the years, she's gone through rough times, and so have I, and we've always spoken to each other about it. And we've had this relationship that isn't, I mean, you know, a mother-in-law relationship can be a nightmare, and most of them are, but this one is really nice. You know, she's crazy, but so am I, and those two kind of crazies kind of mix in together like a parfait. I don't know, but it's a crazy parfait. It's manic, depressive, and like walnuts. Like, it's nice. And I know I got to talk to her because she's showing me photos of Sarah's sister and Sarah's brother are also both married, and they both had recently just had kids, and now Linda's all about being a grandmother, and she's showing me pictures of the kids, and Sarah and I aren't going to have kids. And, you know, we've never talked about it, Linda and I. I don't think Sarah's talked about it with her mother, because with everybody else having the kids, you know, that's the focus. We don't want to pull focus from that, you know, so we just haven't said anything. But, you know, she showed me these things, and I just feel like I got to tell her, because we're friends, and it's not good to have certain things unspoken between friends. You got to have as much of the truth as possible in a friendship to make it real. But I don't have the guts right there to tell her. And she goes, hey, is there like a deli? Can we go get some cigarettes? And I'm like, yeah. There's something about me that, like, people are like, you know what? I'll smoke with you. I don't really drink, but let's go get a pitcher. Me and you. Sarah's dad, like, curses around me like a sailor. She's like, my dad doesn't curse. Like, with me, he does. He's filthy. There's something about me that maybe that's why they like have me around. So I give them an excuse to be like me. So we go to a deli, and she gets some cigarettes, and now we're just walking, and we're going through, we're just walking down Broadway, and because of her, like, wonder at everything, my eyes are open to the things that I've immediately in the past couple of years become jaded to in New York. Because when you're living in New York, you're just looking straight ahead or down. You're not looking around anymore. And I start to see, like, the beautiful stuff she's pointing out. Buildings and details in the building and the all the in the garment district or the all the wholesale jewelry places, like the riots of color and all this, and the people, and she's giving money to everybody that's asking for it. And I'm just like, put your wallet away. And